As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
It's Straight Outta Cobham, a show about Chelsea FC from The Athletic. On today's episode, Blues book their place at Wembley. We look ahead to Saturday's trip to Manchester, round up the rest of the Chelsea news, and there's the latest edition of our quiz. Available for free wherever you get your podcasts and ad-free on The Athletic, this is Straight Outta Cobham. Hello, listener. Hope you're well. It's me, Matt Davis-Adams, here for our second weekly dose of Blues chat. I'm joined by The Athletic's Dom Fifield.
Hello, Matt. How are you doing?
I am, well, I'm a bit hungover, to be honest, but less said about that, the better. Sam Parkin, how are you?
Yeah, doing well, Matt. Good morning, Dom.
Morning, Sam.
We're recording just hours after Chelsea's League Cup semi-final second leg against Spurs. Only fitting, therefore, that that's where we kick off today's pod.
Bit deeper from Mount here. 3-0 on aggregate. Rudiger and Saar jumped, and I think the former got the crucial touch. Well, we said game on or game over, depending on who scored first. It's Chelsea that score first.
I just know it hit my head, and I was just hoping that it goes in, it went in, and yeah, this is what I'm working on, and yeah, it was good.
We can play much better, we need to play much better if we want to really deserve results like this, because we did over minutes and in long phases of the match, we did play well. But need to do better.
Here's a couple of tweets from Opta Joe that caught my eye. Last night saw Chelsea FC become the first team in English football history to reach the final of one of the two major domestic cup competitions in six consecutive campaigns. The other tweet, just 350 days after his first game in charge of Chelsea, Thomas Tuchel has become the first manager in the club's history to guide the Blues to the final of each of the League Cup, FA Cup and Champions League. Spurs nil, Chelsea won then. A totally dominant performance from the Blues over two legs. Simon Johnson was there. He sent us this report.
That's full time. I don't know whether you can hear me over there. Music, it's making more noise than the few Tottenham fans that are here left at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium after seeing their side comfortably dispatched a 3-0 on aggregate in the EFL Cup semi-final. Chelsea didn't really have to be at their best to beat a rather disappointing Spurs side. Man of the match for me, VAR. A hat-trick of decisions. The right decisions after Andre Mariner pointed to the spot twice, and also the officials gave a goal for Harry Kane in the second half when he was offside. But Chelsea, you have to say, will be pretty happy with the way they dealt with these two legs. They're on top for the most part throughout. And more importantly, it's put them in great spirits, not only with a chance to win another trophy at Wembley against Arsenal or Liverpool on February the 27th, but this result coming just a few days before facing Manchester City at the Etihad, it will give the squad a good lift. Antonio Rudiger with another trademark performance, although he was involved in one of the VAR incidents with a silly tackle. But as I'm talking, the Chelsea fans celebrating, greeting the Chelsea players as they go over to acknowledge them. It looks to me like there are more Chelsea fans here than Tottenham fans, and that's saying something given the size of this stadium. So Chelsea win 3-0 on aggregate. Job done. On to Manchester City.
You can read Simon's post-match piece on the Tony Rudiger contract situation on The Athletic now. Regarding that, Dom, Thomas Tuchel, speaking to BBC Five Live last night, used the word confident when talking about Rudiger's future at Chelsea. That feels like quite a turnaround for me. We were assuming that he was off, but perhaps not.
I think Thomas Tuchel's been quite confident, generally speaking, throughout the whole process, and so he should, because he's offering Antonio Rudiger quite the platform on which to perform with Chelsea, a successful team that's competing on five fronts this season with promise of, you know, further opportunities for silverware in the years to come, and being integral to that as well. I mean, no other defender has played as many minutes as Antonio Rudiger in this Chelsea team. So I think he's got good reason to talk like that and to speak glowingly and to, you know, suggest that Chelsea is the right place for Antonio Rudiger to play his football and to commit his future to this club. But it ultimately will come down to his decision and what the offer is on the table and whether he deems that to be acceptable. And his agent and his brother, who acts as his agent, will be talking about that and discussing that, you know, regularly at this moment. I thought it was quite telling that in Rudiger's own post-match interview, he talked about chapters, and which felt a bit more short-term, just as a word to use. This has been a great chapter in my life, as if, because when you talk about that, you're always talking about the next chapter, and the next chapter might be Real Madrid, or it might be Bayern Munich, or PSG, or whatever. So that had a slight alarm bell ringing in my head, just that use of that word. But look, I don't think Chelsea can do much more. So Tuchel can't do much more. He's not in charge of, you know, the size of the contract that's being offered. All he's doing is making sure that Antonio Rudiger could potentially walk away from this season with how many trophies? Six, if including the Super Cup to his name. I mean, that's pretty good going.
Sam, how important was a relationship with a manager for you in sort of determining whether you stay or whether you go? Obviously, the money's the significant factor, as it is for everybody in their line of work, pretty much. But that must be an important part of the relationship, particularly if it's either very good, as appears to be in the case of Rudiger and Tuchel, or very bad.
I think it's vitally important. Thinking back to my playing days, there's probably times when I extended contracts because you're enjoying playing for a certain manager, and a manager who believes in you and trusts you and gives you the confidence to go and perform. So, yeah, it's very different to if you're playing for a manager who you know doesn't have that trust to put you out there every week. So I'm sure that will come into his thinking. Completely agree with Dom, actually. I thought that was almost a premeditated line, premeditated quote, as if he thought about what word he would use had that question come up, which inevitably it was going to be posed. So I did think that was interesting, but, you know, obviously it sounds like the club maybe have got room for manoeuvre in terms of the offer. So it's going to be really interesting to see what happens. But I wouldn't say he was completely on his game last night, because he was probably guilty of one or two of those errors that had Thomas Tuchel a little bit scathing post-match, despite the safe path to the final.
Before we get to the actual game, Dom, it feels to me like Chelsea need to get one of Christensen or Rudiger to sign. Would you agree with that? If they lose them both, that's a big issue.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, absolutely. That would be quite wasteful to lose two players of that calibre under freedom of contract. And obviously, it's good news that Thiago Silva's signed up. We've still got a certain uncertainty over Cesar Azpilicueta as well. But yeah, the two younger members of that quartet, Christensen and Rudiger, you want at least one of them to commit their future. And weirdly, I think Rudiger's presence actually helps Christensen in the team. Having a sort of aggressive, manic leader like Rudiger there, it's almost like gets everybody's juices flowing, gets Christensen, who can be a bit becalmed at times, But he seems to thrive with Rudiger as well. So on that basis, you'd like to see both of them committing their futures to the club. But yeah, I mean, let's see where it all goes. I suspect that Christensen ends up signing a contract at Chelsea because, I mean, look at what this team can achieve. Rudiger may look at it and think, well, Real Madrid might be a nice move, you know, somewhere else to go and a different football type of culture to experience where I can also win trophies. I'm not quite sure whether Christensen will have the same kind of suitor for his talents.
In terms of the game then, Sam, Andrew Fisherman did his best to give Spurs a route back into it, but all three of his poor decisions were rightly overturned by VAR. Was the game last night and the tie in general more about Chelsea's quality or Spurs' deficiencies?
Probably the latter, if I'm being truthful, Matt. I'm interested to listen to the Tottenham podcast later in the week, actually, after how scathing they were after the first leg. I couldn't believe that selection when I saw it. Got a bit of sympathy for Antonio Conte because, I mean, if Sessegnon's the alternative to Doherty, for example, on the left-hand side, he is really low on confidence, Ryan Sessegnon, from what we believed he was going to be. And there's a few decisions like that, I think, that are taken out of his hands. Not having Eric Dier clearly would have made them more cohesive in terms of trying to play a bit more from the back if they had a bit of a passer in that defence. But no, I thought Chelsea were incredibly comfortable. I thought having the spine of the team, Azpilicueta, Rudiger, Kepa, Jorginho, players that have been there for so long now, really, and know the system, are so comfortable within it, whereas Spurs are so disjointed. I thought that was so evident last night. I thought if you took Jorginho and Kovacic out of that Chelsea side yesterday, there may have been problems. I thought they just controlled that first half amazingly well, got into so many good positions between the lines, and then Chelsea's final ball did let them down on occasion. And then there was obviously the period when the mistakes started coming in. Obviously, you had the Rudiger challenge, you had the free header from a corner just after, you had the Kepa-Christiansen mix-up in the second half. There was quite a lot of things that could have led to a Tottenham goal, and they should have really scored, and it would have made it quite an uncomfortable last 20 minutes, half an hour, when it should have been anything but. So I can understand why Thomas Tuchel probably wasn't happy with the last 45 minutes, hour of that performance. But to go back to your question, there is an enormous gulf between those two sides at the moment. And I think plainly because this Chelsea team know exactly what they're doing in whatever shape Thomas Tuchel puts them out in at the moment.
I just found both legs so underwhelming from Tottenham. As a complete neutral on this, watching this tie, it was such an anticlimax. And summed up, okay, the comical own goals in the first game, but the generally anemic performance that Spurs offered up. In the second game, you at least wanted them to show some fight, to show some desire, and you could argue that Chelsea offered them the opportunity to, as Sam points out, in the second half. But there was a moment, you know, you get to points, you expect to like a furious start from Spurs, didn't happen. So there's one opportunity then for Antonio Conte to get into these players and say, you're playing for pride. And that was at half time. 22 seconds into the second half, Mateo Kovacic picks up a loose ball that sort of bounced down off Callum Hudson-Odoi. And he's allowed to burst beyond a sort of feeble Harry Winks dangled leg. Emerson Royal doesn't really know what to do and lets him run past him. And then he ploughs into Tanganga and knocks him for six. And I just thought, well, that just sums up Spurs. If that is Spurs showing a bit of fight, three of their players have completely rolled over in the first 20 seconds of the second half. There's no hope at all of any kind of comeback. And it was almost at that point, as a neutral, you'd just say, well, this tie's dead. There's no point. It's not a contest anymore. Conte must be doing his nut. I mean, all that build-up about how he wanted a point to prove against his former employers, that is not a happy marriage.
Yeah, and they've got to come back to the bridge later on this month. Tom, back in whenever it was, when Chelsea played away at Brentford earlier in the season, you wrote a piece for The Athletic on Malang Sarr, and he's actually proved to be quite a useful squad member, hasn't he? When he first came in, you know, Chelsea spent half the summer trying to get rid of him. He's not a world beater by any means, but he's a dependable defender, it seems to me.
Yeah, I thought I was really impressed with him against Spurs. I think he looked slightly more at home at left back, slightly less exposed. I know they swapped to a back three, you know, the old school Thomas Tuchel way towards the end of the game, and he filled in on the left side of the back three then. But at left back, he looked comfortable and he played really well in that first half, in particular, up and down that flank. Aggressive. I think his little running battle with Lo Celso was a feature of that game, and it completely wound Lo Celso up. He wasn't conning the referee with some of his play acting. He just didn't have the beating of Malang Sarr, which was arguably as damning on Lo Celso's performance as it is creditable to Malang Sarr's. But it was good, and for in this situation that Chelsea have found themselves in, indeed. All Premier League clubs, all football clubs have found themselves in with COVID eating into options at any moment. Having somebody that can fill in a couple of positions, and we haven't even, he potentially could fill in defensive midfield as well, has been useful. He's not top calibre. He's not, you know, potentially Chelsea class. You wouldn't necessarily want him in that back line going to Manchester City this weekend. But he has been wholly committed whenever he's played. He's given everything he's got, and he's got better. He's got better with each performance, and that's promising, and he deserves huge credit for that.
And one of the reasons, Sam, that he's got better is obviously because he's being coached by one of the elite coaches in world football at the moment. A few weeks ago, people were kind of keen to jump on the bandwagon of, oh, this is Thomas Tuchel's first test. It's starting to go a bit sour. He's proved, hasn't he, in the last couple of weeks, that he is right up there in terms of the very best coaches in the game at the moment.
Of course. And the statistics back that up. I mean, they're not losing matches, are they? I mean, they've thrown away a few leads at Stamford Bridge, been a bit sloppy in front of goal, which is still something that kind of rumbles on, doesn't it? I wasn't convinced with any of the forward performances. There's no one you would look ahead to the weekend and say they're a shoo-in, they have to play. I'm not sure by the narrative that Kai Havertz was left on the bench for that reason, but that's still a bit of an area of concern for me. But yeah, the manager has navigated, you know, what was a tricky run. I felt that the Liverpool game was going to be a struggle. They reacted magnificently in that game. The change of shape as well for these two games against Tottenham has worked wonderfully well, particularly, as Dom says, for the likes of Sarr, who looked a lot more comfortable at left back. And it's a system. I'm not sure that they'll use it for Manchester City, but it's certainly something that needed to happen, I think, and something that he can revert to for games this season. I think the 3-5-2, the 3-4-3 needed to be mixed up on occasions, and he's done that and shown that in limited time on the training ground. He's got all the players organised.
Well, the big games just keep on coming for Chelsea. Next, we'll preview Saturday's trip to Manchester.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Manchester City versus Chelsea goes down at 12:30 UK time on Saturday at the Etihad Stadium. The Blues won their last season. That was the Citizens who were victorious when the teams met at the Bridge back in September. Joining us now is Mike Maine, who commentates on City for BBC Radio Manchester. Mike, are you and City as convinced as the rest of us that the title's already won?
Yeah, I can guarantee that Pep Guardiola on Friday will say it's far from over. I can script it now for him. He'll say, what, there's a 54, 51 points left to play for. The title's not over. But I think Saturday has a big say, actually, in the title race. City can go, was it 16 points clear, I think, if they win? Which, given the most they've ever lost in a season under Guardiola is six, I think, they'd be 16 points clear, lose four games to make, on top of the two they've lost already. That's only 12 extra points they're going to drop. Complicated maths, but basically, I can't see it happening. If City win on Saturday, I can't see a title race, really. As sad as that is, because you kind of do want it to get the best out of a team. What we've seen with City is when the title's wrapped up a little bit early, actually they drop off in other competitions. We saw it in the lead-up to the Champions League final back in May. It's got a big say, I think, on Saturday, which way this goes.
Any chance that Tuchel has spooked Guardiola a little bit with those three wins last season, or was that negated by September's win in London?
Yeah, I think September, because all the chat, if you remember before the game in September, was, you know, how much Tuchel has got the running of Guardiola, and if this is his ultimate nemesis. But City, as Guardiola will say, that week played Chelsea, PSG and Liverpool all away from home. And yes, they lost in PSG, but Guardiola will say those three performances up to that point were the best that City had ever produced under him. And they were high pressing from the off. I don't really remember. I think Lukaku might have had a chance in that game, but City had the run. I think City came away and deserved the win that day. And I think that dispelled those rumours that Tuchel is Guardiola's weak point. That said, one thing that Tuchel has played a lot under Guardiola, and what we've seen is a lot of managers who do operate this way tend to have a good game against Guardiola is three at the back. So if Chelsea do the same on Saturday, who knows? It could prove tricky.
Mike, are you surprised at the gap that's developed to the top of the Premier League? The reason I ask is because they've done it pretty much without a recognised striker for large parts of this season. As Chelsea well know, I think Foden played down the middle in that game at Stamford Bridge. Are you surprised they haven't gone and got a marquee signing to replace Aguero? And surprised that, yeah, the way they're cantering it would seem.
Not so much surprised this season as I was last season. You're kind of used to it now. This lack of out and out striker. Was I surprised they didn't get one in the summer? Yeah, again, kind of yes, but this is all going to be thrown out the window when someone mentions £100 million for Jack Grealish in a minute. But Manchester City won't be held to ransom over players. They never have. We've seen it in the past. Sanchez, Maguire, etc. So when there were high figures for Harry Kane and Erling Haaland mentioned, 120, 150 million, etc., it didn't surprise me that City went in. They and I think having done it, having known they can do it the previous season, as in last season, that I think Guardiola knew he didn't have to go and panic if there was no striker. Had last season been a complete failure, I think they would have tried very hard to get that Aguero replacement. But I think they've shown their capabilities there. The one concern I have, which isn't always a factor, but always gets brought up every time they don't win or they don't score as many as they have. I'd have to see the stats, but I don't think their shot conversion rate's brilliant. I remember against Southampton at home, it was a 0-0 draw. I think they had 26 shots and a handful on target. Against Leicester, they won 1-0 away. 20-odd shots, one goal. That's City's sticking point. Whereas you know is if there was a Haaland or an Aguero there, that's when, you know, I would expect the conversion rate to be higher, and I actually think they'd probably be even further clear at the top of the league.
Obviously, we're talking pre-Pep presser, but any team news that you can give us? Obviously, Mahrez at AFCON, Phil Foden, bit of a doubt?
Mahrez is the only one. I know, and even Pep in his press conferences tends to keep it pretty tight. Obviously, the first team squad hit by COVID last week for the Swindon game, seven first team players out, and we still saw how strong it was then. So they're not going to be weakened by too much more. Obviously, the quietness from the club this week on the COVID situation probably suggests they haven't had any more positive cases. So if anything, players will be returning.
What about Cole Palmer then, Mike? Brilliant in the cup game. Riyad Mahrez absent for this one. Do you think Pep would trust him in a game of this magnitude?
I don't think he'd trust him to start the game. Trust is a hard word. I wouldn't be surprised, for example, if the front three consisted of Jesus on the right, Foden, Grealish down the middle, and Sterling on the left. We've seen it plenty of times this season. He will tend to opt for his first team regulars first, Pep Guardiola, particularly in a game of this magnitude. But I have to give a word on Cole Palmer and how lively and how brilliant he's looked this season. You saw him for yourself at Swindon, Sam, in the FA Cup third round last week. He's what I like about him is he's kind of unpredictable. You don't actually know what he's going to do. He loves to take on defenders, which is great to see. Not too many do at Manchester City. They kind of get down the wings and then look for the pass inside or try and cut inside. Palmer will try and take them on a little bit. He has an ability to score all kinds of goals outside the box, inside the box. He's tall, so he can offer that height if needed, although we've not seen that too much. And it's unpredictable nature. Is he going to pass it? Is he going to cut inside? Does he fancy this run alone? And I think that's a real strength of his, and I'm really looking forward to where his career goes. And he does seem, after Phil Foden, the next one off the sort of the academy production line with James McAtee not too far behind him.
Finally, then, Mike, give us a prediction for Saturday.
I never like doing this because every time I ask someone, I know the pressure that they're under. I think it'll be low scoring, but I think Manchester City might just edge it. Obviously, Chelsea playing in midweek. City have had a week off. If they have got stars returning, then great. Added strength to Pep Guardiola's ammunition. So, yeah, I'll go with a narrow 1-0, 2-1 at max win.
All right, Mike, we really appreciate your time today, but I've got to wish you the very worst of luck for Saturday.
Pleasure. The same to you.
Mike Maine of BBC Manchester there. Dom, it's a must-win game, this, for Chelsea, isn't it? Therefore, what's the best approach in terms of tactics, formation, lineup that you think? Does Romelu Lukaku have to play now?
It's a must-win game in terms of the title race general. I mean, I think Liverpool will be hoping that Chelsea pull a result out here as well. It's a game where you'd expect Thiago Silva and N'Golo Kanté to come back into the starting 11. Romelu Lukaku, it's a good question. He was ineffective in a 2 in the corresponding fixture at Stamford Bridge, which is still arguably the best I've seen any team play against Tuchel's Chelsea. With Brighton pushing them close, by the way. He's not definitely, he doesn't have to play, but then, I mean, that maybe that fluent and fluid front three might be the way to go for this match. But I suspect he probably will end up with picking Lukaku, just because I think it probably is more of a, if you leave him out, it probably prompts more questions and provokes things that they probably don't need. He will do a job. I mean, hopefully if they get the ball to him in the right areas, and then he can inflict damage on Manchester City and at least draw players to him, and which might provide a bit of space for a Mason Mount or whoever the other player is. If that's Kai Havertz, if that's Timo Werner, if it's Callum Hudson-Odoi, who incidentally I thought was excellent against Spurs again in midweek as well. But it's nice for him to have options. It looks a bit more like a Chelsea squad now. They've got a few players on the bench. They're a stronger bench, a stronger squad, and you know, barring any COVID issues in the build-up, although most of the players now had COVID, so they should be okay. To be honest, it should be a proper side and a proper test. Hopefully, to pose for City.
Sam, could you ever go with a front three of Lukaku, Werner and Havertz? Or do you need some kind of balance in there, whether that be with a Mount, a Ziyech or a Pulisic?
I think you could, but I think you'd always want Mason Mount in the team, give or take, for the big matches. You could probably do it against a lesser side in the Premier League and see how you get on. They got to take optimism from what Leicester did in that second half. And I think if you're mirroring kind of that shape, that blueprint, then it would probably be Mount as your Madison, and then Werner as Lookman, and then your centre forward. So, and then those two wide players have to help out the wing backs, you know, when they're called upon. So, I mean, they have to be better than that first game. And if memory serves me right, it was on the back of the Spurs win in the league, wasn't it? When the tactical tweak at half time had kind of turned things in Chelsea's favour, and he went with the three man midfield because those three, there was very little between them at that time. And he went with the front two, and there was such a detachment between Werner, Lukaku, and the midfield trio that they hardly got in City's box. I mean, it was a bit of a chastening afternoon, wasn't it? Manchester City absolutely squeezed the life out of Chelsea. So I don't see it being something similar. But for that reason, I think you have to go with the three. I think you do, because defensively they can double up in the wide areas where Manchester City can kill you. And then going forward, you've got the mobility to break beyond their high line. So I'd be surprised if that's not the shape.
Tom, earlier I lavished praise on Thomas Tuchel. Just thinking back to that game in September, it's going to be really interesting on Saturday, isn't it? Because he had it not easy against Pep Guardiola, but he beat him three times last season. It's going to be interesting to see if he's found a way to counter the way that City dominated Chelsea so much earlier in the season.
Yeah. He probably looks back with a bit of regret on his changing of the system for that match. And it was a rude awakening, actually. I think a little reality check, because I think we were all thinking, well, my word, Chelsea are motoring away from beat City, and they, you know, this title is theirs. And actually, it's what we've actually seen is almost a mirror image of last season with City, where they start slow and then they suddenly get in this role. It's up to Chelsea now to check that momentum, and playing in a system in which they're most comfortable and fluent is probably the way to do that. It's, you don't want to overthink it almost. You don't want to fall into the trap that Guardiola did in the Champions League final. It's interesting. I mean, even on midfield, if they're only going to play two central midfielders, and N'Golo Kante, you'd imagine, has to play because he virtually counts, you know, the energy that he supplies and the dynamism he supplies. Who is the other one? Do they go with Jorginho? Because Kovacic has been excellent of late. I mean, it would be insanely harsh to drop him. I mean, who would you go with, Sam? I've no idea.
Were my eyes deceiving me last night, or was that the worst Conte's been in recent memory? About three or four times his touch got away from him where he gave the ball away. That can't
blind
be
blind turn as well, wasn't there? We gave the ball and then Spurs countered as a result. But yeah, odd.
It's not the worst issue to have, though, is it? I mean, which two of those three are you going
to
pick?
It's very uncharacteristic for N'Golo Kante to be like that, because usually when he's semi-fit or recovering from illness or injury and he comes back into the team, they fling him on and he plays like a man possessed. Mm. And maybe it just reflected the fact that was such a non-event, really, because the tie was won when he came on. He won't be that bad at the Etihad. He will be a player of influence again at the Etihad, I thought.
Well, whoever starts and whatever the score, we will be reflecting on that game on Monday's pod.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Elsewhere in Chelsea news, the women's team back in action on Sunday. They go to Everton in the WSL. Russian international left-back Alsu Abdulina could feature for the first time, having joined from Lokomotiv Moscow over the winter break. In terms of the men's academy sides, the under-21s bowed out of the EFL Trophy on Thursday night. They lost 4-1 against Arsenal at the Emirates, Xavier Mbeyamba received a harsh red card, which swung the game in the Gunners' favour. Jaden Wareham had drawn Chelsea level. Many of the players who featured in that game will be in action on Monday night when the under-23s resume their league campaign away to Crystal Palace. You can watch that with me live on Chelsea's online platforms. If you're listening to this podcast really early, i.e. on Thursday tea time, it will be pre the FA Youth Cup fourth round tie at Watford tonight as we record. The under-18s then host Brighton at Cobham in the league on Saturday. Sam, you'll be commentating on the Youth Cup tie on Thursday. Who in this team should people be looking out for? Because it's been another season where the academy's come to the fore.
Yeah, well, we were treated a little bit in the previous round against Leyton Orient. Ed Brown went with Malik Mothersill and Jude Soonsup Bell in attack in tandem, which was really exciting. Both of them scored, if memory serves me right. So those two, 100%. Leo Castledine, I played alongside his dad a long time ago. He is a really effervescent type of character, full of running, joins in with the front players. So he's another one. But I've been really impressed with defensively, actually. Alfie Gilchrist, Brody Hughes, they're two names that have had really consistent seasons. And I know that the staff have been delighted with them. And I suppose we'll wait and see if Lewis Hall gets a run out. I would imagine he's still been involved in first team training in the last week or so. So that's probably doubtful. But of course, he'll stand out at the level as well.
How would he feel if you got put in the under-18s tonight? We often talk about that, don't we? We have done over the years when we've done PL2 games or whatever and somebody's been around the first team squad. That's a kind of interesting test of character, isn't it, if it's kind of back to the day job?
I think full of beans right now. You know, the Youth Cup is the prestigious competition. I think he'll be balanced enough to realise that an opportunity arose to play in the first team earlier than he would have anticipated. And a lot of the staff, I think everyone's been open about that. This rise has taken everyone a little bit by surprise, but cool, he's taken his chance and some. So no, I think he'd go back tonight with a certain degree of swagger, but in a good way, and probably put in a great performance because they're going to need their better players if they're going to get their FA Youth Cup crown back. So I wouldn't have any concerns over him tonight. Maybe ask me again in 3 months' time on a wet night somewhere up north in the PL2 when there's no one there, when you're playing at a non-league ground. And if he's not tasted the first team action again at that point, then maybe his attitude will have to remain as good as it looks to have been to this point.
Right, we can't put this off any longer. Let's quiz. Three questions each then. Chelsea versus Manchester City, the theme this week. Sam, you're up first. Which player scored twice against City for Chelsea last season? It's the ones that I found is it's the ones that are most often prove the most difficult.
I got it. Go on, cup games included, yeah?
Yep.
Ziyech.
Correct. Well, FA Cup semi-final and at the Etihad too. Dom, here's your first one. This is also a recent one. Name the three Chelsea substitutes who Thomas Tuchel brought on in last year's Champions League final.
Christensen came on for Thiago Silva.
Correct.
One of the midfielders, Kovacic, did he come on?
Correct, yes, because he finally got a medal where he'd actually participated in the final.
I get a mark for two, surely, two out of three.
I'm afraid not.
Do I get two guesses for the third?
Okay, yeah, that's fair. You can have two guesses.
This is brutal.
You did this to yourself with the Christmas one that you did for me and Lucy.
Right, it'll be one of the attacking players then. So, Ziyech, did he? He didn't start, I don't think. Ziyech, was he one?
No, one guess left.
Oh, for God's sake. Pulisic?
Is correct, yes. 1-1. Bit of a shot in the dark, but yeah, you got that.
Who did he come on for?
No idea. Listener, you know, don't you? Very good. Sam, here's your second question. Which former manager of yours got the only goal of the game in the first Premier League meeting between the sides, a Chelsea win at Main Road in 1992?
Wow. Mick Harford.
Is correct, yeah.
Oh,
That's probably the easiest question of the quiz.
So do I get one on one of my former managers?
This is yours, Dom. Chelsea's final visit to Main Road came in 2002. The Blues won 3-0 thanks to a Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank goal and a brace from Gianfranco Zola. Which two players in the City starting 11 that day would go on to play for Chelsea? 2002.
Sean White Phillips.
Correct. By the way, how old does it make you feel when Sean Wright Phillips' son makes his debut in the FA Cup last weekend?
I couldn't believe that. I was really emotional seeing Ian Wright talking about his grandson. It was just amazing. Oh my, you're absolutely right. Anelka.
Brilliant. Really high standard so far this week. Sam, you've got to match that. This is your third and final question. You're 2 for 2. As it stands, which Brazilian scored 13 minutes into his debut to put City 1-0 up in what would turn out to be a 3-1 Chelsea win at the Etihad in September 2008?
Rubinho.
Well done.
Oh, straight off the bat. Absolutely very magnificent. This is going to have to get much harder next week. Right, final question then, Dom, and you've got to get this right, otherwise it's defeat. What was unusual about the 2012 Community Shield between Chelsea and Manchester City?
What was unusual about that?
Listen, the producer Lucy's looking pretty smug on the Zoom because I think that she got this one and is quite pleased about it.
Was it the venue?
Yes. What was the venue?
You just asked me what was unusual about it. The venue was the unusual thing. What was the venue? Right. So it clearly wasn't Wembley and it clearly wasn't the Millennium Stadium. So... they wouldn't have been in Manchester because Manchester City were playing, so...
Process of elimination leads Aston us Villa? One standout venue. Aston Villa is correct. Can you? I'm giving you the point there, so it's 3-3, but can you remember why it was played at Villa
was
Park?
It was presumably because of the Olympics, was it?
It was the final of the Olympic football tournament on the same day. Oh, well done. I mean, a satisfying draw, I'd call that. If you get a 3-3, you're pretty happy with that as a punter, I think. As I say, on Monday's show, we're going to reflect on the City game. We'll also look ahead to Tuesday's rescheduled visit to Brighton. Dom, you don't like Brighton. We know that, but you do like writing for The Athletic. What have you been doing specifically?
I don't mind Brighton.
Well,
I'm going to Brighton on Friday to cover the Palace match there, which will test my fondness for Brighton. And then I am going to cover that game, the Chelsea game, on Tuesday as well. So I'm basically becoming a Brighton resident for the next week. What am I writing about? I'm writing about... Actually, I'll probably talk to Sam about this. I might even give him a ring after this. I'm writing about the sensation of being a 90th minute substitute. Oh, there you go. I'm definitely going to ring. Yeah. I'm the blower to you in about 10 minutes, Sam. It's, yeah, just I mean, quite interesting because I think we all assume that the 90th minute substitute wants to get on the pitch because he gets his win, sorry, he gets his match fee or his appearance bonus or whatever, and that the manager is doing it for time wasting purposes. But it appears that it's not always. That's not always the case, not least on the bonus thing, which the intricacies of player contracts I've explored a bit of that already, which has been quite interesting. And it's just a sort of typical different type of piece for The Athletic, really, now that Liam has relieved some of my Chelsea duties.
Let's have a quick preview of that then, Sam. A, did you always get your bonus when you came on? And B, did you have a shower if you ever came on as a 90th minute substitute? Or could you just like get changed and go straight home?
Oh, the indignity of it all. it would probably be a percentage of your appearance money, I would suggest, if memory serves me right. But the worst thing about it, obviously, well, in certain circumstances, it was a little bit embarrassing. You know, you didn't really want to go on. And then, of course, you had to do the running after the game, which is the ultimate negative thing that's associated with being a footballer, especially if you're away from home up north. The players have had if you've lost the game and you've not got on to affect it, and then you've got to do box to boxes in an empty stadium in the freezing cold, that was a real test, especially for the experienced players. So I think that comes into it as well.
Looking forward to reading that. Athletic.com/ChelseaPod, the place to go to sign up if you aren't currently a subscriber. That'll do us for today, though. Many thanks to Dom, to Sam, and to Lucy, and to you, listener. We'll meet you back here on Monday. Until then, bye for now.
The Athletic.